Thank you for listening to this sermon recorded at the Lost River Church of Christ. For more information, check out our website at lostriverchurch.org or call us at 270-843-3163. We consider it an honor to share the good news of Jesus Christ with you completely free of charge. Have a great day and enjoy the sermon.
Good morning and welcome to everyone. It's great to see every single one of you here this morning. We have a little problem. There we go. We have visitors with us, as we almost always do, and we're always honored by your presence, and we do welcome you here. And to every member, it's always a joy and a pleasure and an honor for us to be together. We are in a series that we're just really getting started. It's going to be one of the major series that we've ever done here, and that will certainly be the major series for this year and this spring. Over the next several weeks, really from now through March, we're going to be studying encounters with Jesus in a series that we're calling Face to Face with the Glory that Transforms. What Paul said to the Corinthian church was that when we behold the glory of the Lord and see in Him the ideal of what we should strive to become, that His glory is mirrored by us and transforms us and changes us little by little over a process of time into the likeness of Christ Himself, which is what God's goal for each and every one of us is. And so what we're doing is we're looking at examples or situations where individuals in the Gospels encounter Jesus face to face, and trying to look at their story through their eyes and see what they saw when they looked into the face of Jesus, and then see how it changed them. And the hope is that we will catch a glimpse of the glory that they beheld, and as we see Him through their eyes, we're going to be transformed ourselves. So that's what we're after, that's what we're doing, and this morning we're going to be looking in John, the first chapter. If you want to follow along there, I'll be putting the text up on the screen. But by way of introducing all of that, I want to say that a little story about our family situation here. I guess it was a week ago Friday. I was getting ready to go to Arkansas for a weekend preaching trip, and Janice was rushing around the house, getting ready to take Joshua to school and go on off to the office. There was just one problem. She couldn't find her car key. And so she's scrambling around, and Joshua's scrambling around, and I start to scramble around, though I'm not scrambling that hard, not looking that hard, because I never am the one in our family to find anything. I'm the guy who loses things. Janice and Joshua are the ones who find things. So I'm looking in all the obvious places where it's obviously not to be found, and I'm just kind of waiting to hear those magical words. I found it, right? Isn't that wonderful when somebody and everybody's looking for something, and then somebody says, I found it. That means now, okay, life can move forward. And so I'm listening for that, but it never comes. And time's getting shorter and shorter, so finally I just pull off my key to her Acadia, give it to her, and she and Joshua take off. Later that afternoon, as I'm driving to Arkansas, I get a text from Janice that says, I found my key. And I said, well, where was it? And she said, in my running shoe. Which explains why we were looking so ineffectually for it. We weren't looking where it could be found. Who thinks to look for a car key in a running shoe? And isn't it true that the thing that you need most is so often found in a place that you least expect to find it? I mean, how many times have you found something valuable, something that you really needed, and it was in a place you didn't expect to find it, and maybe it was even in a place that you didn't want to be looking, which reminds me of a Derek Palmer story. When he and Marissa got married, the next morning they're ready to go off on their honeymoon and fly, I think, to Europe. Is it Europe? Something like that. Fly somewhere else. They don't remember. They're flying somewhere. Only problem is Derek's wallet, or his license, his identification is nowhere to be found, and the realization, I think these were an old pair of shorts that I just threw away. And they're now, I guess, maybe in the hotel dumpster. And so I don't know why he wasn't involved in the search. All I know is John and Derek's father were dumpster diving behind the hotel in Nashville looking for Derek's ID so that he could go on his honeymoon. And I don't know what exactly transpired there, but I can just sort of imagine. I don't know if it was John or Derek's dad that actually found it. But when the words, "I found it," were shouted, I'm sure everybody was filled with joy. It's not the place you wanted to be looking, but when you found it, there's this sense that life's been suspended and nothing can move forward until it, whatever it is found. And it might be something small. Maybe it's a password. Maybe it's a remote control, but nothing that you had planned for the day or the evening is going to happen until it gets found. Or it may be something much more significant, like you're seeking purpose and meaning to your life. And until you find the key that unlocks that, you're just stuck where you are. And when we come to the pages of the New Testament, as the New Testament opens, and what we can also learn from just reading secular history, is that it was a time in which there was just this great sense of something's missing. We've lost something. And we've tried everything. We've looked everywhere. We've looked into Greek philosophy, and it seemed pretty promising, and it sort of opened up some doors. But by the time that the first century rolled around, it had had its heyday, and the answers that maybe some people thought would be forthcoming from man's intellectual inquiry were at a dead end. And then there was the Jewish religion that was the greatest thing that the world had ever seen up to a point, but it had reached the point where there was something else that had to happen. The story that it began was clearly foretelling that something more and someone more was coming, and they weren't here, and we're just stuck. And then there was the Romans. They had the power, and they had what was called the Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome. And it was, in a sense, a peace because they enforced order in a tyrannical sort of fashion. And while there was a little bit of a peace, it was a peace held together simply by the force of coercive power. And there was a sense throughout the world, and certainly in Judea and around Israel, that something was missing. And so there was a search, there was a longing, there was a looking for something. We haven't found it in any of these other places. And it's in that sense of longing and searching that our text today finds its context and helps make sense. And the text begins like this. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. Now, this is right at the very beginning of his ministry. He's not well known. He's not recognized throughout the nation. And he goes to Galilee, which is sort of a remote part of Israel. And it's sort of the backwater district. It's the place that people sort of look down upon. Certainly those people down in Judea around Jerusalem, they sort of sneered when they heard of Galilee. But Jesus goes to Galilee, and that's where Jesus is from. And when he goes there, he finds Philip, and he says to him, "Follow me." And if you look in the context here and in the parallels in the other Gospels, this is the early formative period of Jesus' ministry where he's calling disciples. He's a rabbi, he's a teacher, and he's forming around him a group of followers and disciples who are going to be learning from him. And one of the first ones that he finds is this guy named Philip, and he tells him, I want you to follow me. And so he becomes a disciple, a follower of Jesus. And then we're told a couple of verses later that Philip, having decided to follow Jesus, went for just a moment to find his friend Nathanael, and he said to him, "We found him." Found it, right? Found it. We've all been looking. We've looked here. We've looked there. We've looked everywhere, and nobody's been able to find it. But I'm telling you, we found him. We found the one that we have been looking for, and he's the one specifically, and this was important to Philip and Nathanael as Jews. We found him of whom Moses in the law and also all the prophets have written about. You see, the Old Testament, the Jewish scriptures, were filled with these prophecies and these foreshadowings of one who would come, who would be like Moses, a great lawgiver, but greater than Moses, and that the people, when he comes, should heed what he has to say. And all the prophets who came after Moses also indicated that a great one was coming, a Savior was coming, one who would offer himself as the sacrifice for not only the Jews, but for all the world. And like Brian said, that scroll in Revelation that carried forth the plan and purposes of God for the world were held at bay until someone worthy came along that could open it, and God's plan and purpose for the world could continue forward in history. And Nathaniel, Philip rather, tells Nathaniel, "We found him. We found the one that's been written about by Moses and the prophets." And then he says this. He says, "It's Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Now, that doesn't mean so much to us. We hear that, Jesus of Nazareth. And that's confusing maybe to some people because they think, well, I thought Jesus was from Bethlehem. And Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but he was from Nazareth. He was born in one place, but he grew up in Nazareth. And Nazareth was in Samaria, which I've already suggested was sort of this hick region of Israel. And Nazareth, even within Samaria, was just a spot on the map. There were only a few hundred people living in this village. It was a nothing village, which maybe helps explain what happens next. He tells his friend that we found him, we found the one that Moses and the law is writing about, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael's response was this. He said, "Nazareth? Nazareth?" It's like Allen Iverson practiced, you know. It's like the most contemptuous expression you can imagine. "Nazareth?" And then he exclaims, "What good thing? What good could possibly come out of a know-nothing, podunk place like Nazareth? Here, Philip, you've got my expectations built up. We're searching everywhere. We're looking everywhere. And this is serious. This isn't just looking for the remote or the password. We're looking to unfold the future of our nation and perhaps the future of the world. And it all hinges on one person. And you tell me you found him and he's from Nazareth?" And so with this great contempt, he dismisses what Philip has to offer. And this reminds me of stories of yesteryear. And I know for many of you, you've been waiting perhaps for years for me to tell you some things about my hometown where I grew up. I was born in Amarillo, but I grew up, my hometown was Hereford, Texas. Hereford, Texas. And there it is. There it is. So it's awesome, isn't it? You know, as we're growing up, we begin to come of age and we begin to look around and get some perspective on life. And you know, when you're growing up, all you know is what you know. And then you get to realize, you know, there's big cities like Lubbock, you know. There's amazing places like Amarillo. Or finally, you begin to realize, hey, there's Dallas down the road. And some people sort of dig their heels in and stand up tall and say, no, no, no. Hereford is the best. No place on earth like it. And in fact, it is, if you can read that, it is the beef capital of the world. And so it's not nothing. I mean, that's something. The next time you have a steak, you can remember Lawrence's hometown, Hereford. It probably passed through here. And other people just sort of said, you know, this place stinks. It's not the best place in the world. This place stinks. And it does sometimes literally stink, especially after rain, because there are, within a 50-mile radius of Hereford, over 3 million head of cattle. If the cattle ever decide that they're taking over, there's nothing that the few thousand people that live in Hereford are going to do to stop this. And so the cattle outnumber the people dramatically. And some people just said, you know, this we're a nothing town in the middle of nowhere, and nothing ever happens from here, and nothing good is ever going to come from here. And so it was with Nathaniel. We're looking, but we're not looking in Nazareth. Because we're not looking in Nazareth, something can happen. Something important can happen. And it's just like this. We miss out on the things we need when we reject the place where they can be found. We miss out on the things that we need the very most if we just reject, out of prejudice, out of assumptions, and out of hand, the thing that we need the most. I'm not looking for the keys in the shoe, but what if the shoe is where the key is found? You got to look where it is, not where it isn't. Not the place that you want to look. You got to look at the place where it can be found. You might not want to look in the dumpster, John. You may not want to go dumpster diving. That's not where anybody wants to be. But if that's where it is, That's where you need to look. And we can miss out on what we need the most when we refuse or reject the place where it can be found. Maybe some of you this morning have had friends come to you and say, hey, I found what we're looking for. I found the answer to the big questions in life. You know, the questions like, where did we come from? And what on earth are we here for? And what lies ahead of us? And what should we be doing in the meantime? These are the big questions that so many people ignore, and that when you Google, you just really don't find satisfying answers. And your friend maybe comes to you and says, I found it. And you say, yeah, well, that sounds great. Where is it? And he says, it's in the Bible. And you say, Bible? We talk about the Bible? That old book? But could it possibly be, I just ask you to consider, could it possibly be that the thing that you need the very most may be in the place that, for whatever reasons, you've just sort of rejected out of hand without fully investigating? Or somebody comes and says, you know, I found what I'm looking for. I finally found the peace that I couldn't find anywhere else. And I finally found the joy, and I finally found the hope that I've been so desperately in need of. And they say, well, where did you find that? And they say, I found it in Jesus. And you say, Jesus? Come on. But maybe the thing you need most is in the place that you, for whatever reasons, have just rejected. But maybe you should look. Or I found a connection with people who actually do care about me and who share their lives together and that actually encourage me to become a better person. It's like I found acceptance and at the same time accountability. And there's sort of this love and affection, but there's also this upward pressure to grow and to become more than I was before. And they say, well, where did you find that? And you say, well, I found it in the church. Church? Could it be? And you're here this morning, so obviously Phillips had some effect on you, Nathaniel, and you've decided to check it out. And I want to just encourage that just a little bit more, because the thing that you need the very most could be found in a place that you least expected and maybe that for various reasons you've rejected. You know, I think Nathaniel probably had his reasons for saying Nazareth and sort of scoffing at the idea that the hope of the world, the Savior of the world, the hope of Israel could rise up out of a place like Nazareth. I mean, he was from Cana, we're told, later in the Gospels, which was about 3 or 3.5 miles down the road from Nazareth. And so he knew the boys from Nazareth, right? He knew some Nazarenes, and he's like, yeah, I know those guys, and salvation may come, but it ain't coming from there. And maybe you've got reasons, too, for rejecting the Bible or rejecting Jesus or rejecting the church. Maybe you've had some bad church experiences, or maybe you've heard a version of Jesus that somebody gave you that just was less than helpful. But maybe, again, it's worthy of taking a little bit closer look. And one thing that you might want to consider, because this is a number one reason, a large reason why so many people in our time and in our day-to-day are rejecting these things, that's not a good reason. And if this is the reason that you've been pushing back, I really want to encourage you to rethink about it. And it's this, it's chronological prejudice. You know, we're living in a time, fortunately, that people are becoming less and less, I hope and I believe, prejudiced about others simply because of their skin color or their race or their culture. So we're not regionally as prejudiced perhaps as we were at one point, and that's a good thing. But there's a prejudice that remains today and perhaps is stronger than it ever was, and that is that we are the times, and we are the people, and these are the times, and any answers that anybody came up with at any time other than just right now are not even worth listening to. But what we need to recognize is that we live in, just like everybody else who's ever lived, just in a time period that's coming, and it's going, and it's passing away. And maybe what we should do is begin to ask the question, well, what is there that sort of remains constant over time? Is there anything that people have actually found useful and valuable and helpful in the first century and in the third century and in the seventh century and in the 12th century and in the 18th century and in the 21st century? And people who come from all sorts of backgrounds and all sorts of cultures and every tribe and tongue and nation have also found it helpful. Something that is consistently valuable to people across time and across cultures, maybe that's a way to determine whether something is worth paying attention to or listening to or at least giving a shot. And so don't let chronological prejudice cause you to just say out of hand, it's old and therefore outdated. Because you could just as well say, no, it stood the test of time. And therefore, I need to take a look. And that's exactly, fortunately, what we do see Nathanael finally being willing to do. And so when he asks his friend, can anything good come from Nazareth? Nathanael's answer is just wonderful. And so whether you're the friend who's come at the invitation of another friend who said, hey, I want you to check these things out, or whether you know somebody who sort of has this chronological snobbery where they look down at things that are ancient and things like the Bible and Jesus and the church, and they say things to you like, could anything good come from there? Consider the answer that Philip gave Nathanael. It's brilliant, it's wonderful, and it's something that's repeatable, that you can use, that I can use, and that's so helpful and that I would encourage you to consider this morning. When Nathanael asked Philip this question, Philip answered him and said, three words, come and see. Just come and see. Many, many years ago, I was invited to just come and see. And I came and I saw. And what I've discovered is something that I wouldn't trade anything for. And what I want for you more than anything else is for you to just come and see. And come and see what Jesus can do for you. And what he can do in you. And what he can do through you. Because I believe there's no one else who's ever lived or ever will live who will be able to do for you, in you, or through you what Jesus can do. But you've got to come and see if that's ever going to happen. And what you'll find when you look there is you'll see that he's not dead, he's not distant, and he isn't dormant, but that he is alive and that he is active. And by his word and through his spirit, he can still accomplish amazing things. Strongholds in your life, destructive habits, what the Bible describes as sin, things that just hold you on that you wish you could break free from and have never found the ability or the courage or the strength or even the reason to do so, you might just find in Jesus if you'll just come and see. And so we encourage you to keep coming and keep seeing. We encourage everyone to tell their friends to come and to see, to bring them to Jesus. Well, the next thing that happens is that Nathanael finally decides to accept Philip's invitation, and he comes, and when he comes to Jesus, Philip's bringing him along, and Nathanael's still just sort of muttering perhaps under his breath, but as they are approaching, before he ever even gets there, just as they come into earshot, you can sort of imagine the scene. Jesus speaks out, and he says to him, here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. This is actually a very humorous statement if I read it right. It's sort of an oxymoronic statement. It is a piece of Jewish humor, which Jesus can get away with because Jesus was a Jew. And what Jesus is basically saying is it's a true Israelite. And remember what I said at the introduction to the welcome this morning? That Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, was a deceiver and a trickster. I mean, that was his brand. That was his trademark. Watch out because he will pull one over on you in a hurry. And Jesus says, well, now, Nathanael, you're an Israelite, a true Israelite, a true son of Israel, of Jacob, and in you there's no deceit. Which perhaps is a compliment to Nathanael because he's saying, you just call it like it is, don't you? You just say what you think. And when you were asked to come and see me and invited to me by your friend Philip, you said, could anything good come out of Nazareth? You just speak your mind, don't you? And Nathanael is sort of set back by this because they've never met. They've never engaged in any sort of conversation, and Jesus is indicating that he's familiar with these characteristics about Nathanael. And so Nathanael says, appropriately so, "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. It's like, have we met before? Something missing. How do you know these things about me? And it's so important and it's so significant. And here's what Jesus answers. He says, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." That just makes my mind go off with all kinds of questions. How about you? "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree." Now, we're going to see in a moment that this really does get to Nathanael. And probably part of it was because of what had happened under the fig tree. I have no idea what was going on under the fig tree. But Jesus knew about the fig tree, and Nathanael's like, okay, well, that's a significant deal. Now, under the fig tree, maybe that was the place at some point in the past Nathanael had got right with God. Maybe he had there prayed. Maybe there he had decided that he was going to seek and search and dedicate his life to looking for the one that was coming. I don't know. Maybe it was some sort of religiously devotional experience that he had under the fig tree. Maybe it was something he shouldn't have been doing. Maybe it was something bad. Maybe it was something embarrassing. I don't know what it was, but it was two things I know for sure. It was something significant, and it was something private. Something that no one else knew anything about, and he was sure that nobody knew anything about it. And it was significant because when Jesus speaks to him about knowing this and seeing him there before they had ever even met and knowing all about what had happened there, it blew Nathanael away. Now that's meaningful to me. And I think it should be impactful to every one of us here this morning. Because what it means is that Jesus knows everything about you. Even that fig tree incident. Yeah, that. He knows about that too. He knows everything about you. He knows everything about me. He knows everything about us, and still, he calls you to come follow him. He calls you to come alongside of him, to be with him. What would you give to have a relationship with someone who knows every last detail about you, who knows you better than yourself, all the deep, dark secrets, all the things that you hide from others because you're afraid if they knew that about you, they would leave you? And he knows it, and he still loves you. He still seeks you. He still comes for you. And all of this is being processed in a moment of time by Nathanael, and then Nathanael's response is perhaps not so surprising when we think of it in those terms. He says, "Rabbi, teacher, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. I found him. I found it. It wasn't where I expected. It wasn't what I was looking for. I'm like Jacob at Bethel, God is in this place, and I didn't know it." It's like Janice looking in her shoe. It's like John looking in the dumpster. It's like a million other things that we find in the place that we least expect it. So Nathanael finds what he's looking for in Jesus of Nazareth. And so he confesses his great faith in Jesus. And Jesus responds to him with these words, "Do you believe this just because I told you I had seen you under the fig tree?" Now that's something. But it's almost like Jesus is saying, hold on a minute. You know, easy come, easy go. But one thing I do notice here that I think is interesting is that Jesus acknowledges something that a lot of people I think don't really realize, and that is that Christianity is an evidence-based religion. It's not just some sort of this blind faith. It is Jesus giving reasons for people to believe in him. Nathanael had perhaps good reasons because of what he had known of people from Nazareth to not expect much out of Jesus, but Jesus immediately begins to give him reasons why he should believe. And so it is that faith comes by experiencing these things, hearing God's words finding that there are reasons for us to lean on him and trust him and follow him, and he begins to provide those for Nathanael here. And over time, that faith grows, because look at what Jesus says. You believe because I told you I'd seen you under the fig tree, but you will see greater things than these. You haven't seen anything yet. Nathanael, if you'll keep following me, if you'll stay close to me, if you'll stick with me, you're going to see more and more evidence. You're going to have increasing reason to put your trust in me and to declare that I am the Son of God, the King of Israel, and the Savior of mankind. And eventually, like Nathanael, if you keep looking, because notice he doesn't just say this to Nathanael. He said, I told you, because I told you I'd seen you under the fig tree. But then he says, you in the original is plural. You all will see greater things than these. So he's now turning his attention to not just Nathanael, but all those who are with him, Philip and the rest. You're going to see greater things than these. And if you follow Jesus long enough and you keep looking closely enough, what you're going to see, the greater things that you're going to see, Jesus describes this way. Are you ready? This is the part of the sermon that I've been like excited about all week. So I hope that you're ready. Jesus says, you keep looking at me, you keep following me, here's the greater thing you're going to see. You're going to see heaven open. I'm telling you the truth. You're going to see heaven open, and you're going to see the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. It's already echoed back to Jacob by saying to Nathanael, you're a true Israelite, a true descendant of Jacob in whom there's no deceit. And now he just brings that full on, and he reminds us of the story of Jacob that we opened with this morning, when he had that vision in a place he least expected it, when he thought he was in the middle of nowhere, and that he thought that he had nothing, that he'd left everything behind and all of his striving was for naught, and God reveals himself to him there. I'm your God. I'm with you, and I'll take care of you, and I'll bring you back when your sojourn is over. And so what Jesus tells Nathanael and Philip and everyone there and all of us who hear these words is that he, Jesus, is the ladder. He's like the ladder in Jacob's dream. He connects heaven and earth and brings them together. And if we look long enough, we're going to see that. When Nathanael realized that what he thought was a nobody from Nazareth was actually the Son of the living God, a whole new perspective, a whole new reality, a whole new realm and way of seeing the world unfolded before him. And I'm telling you, when you begin to see Jesus for who he really is, and you see him as the incarnate Son of God who stretches between heaven and earth, on earth his feet firmly rest on the ground, just like the ladder touched the ground because of his incarnation. He became one of us, born of the Virgin, living among men. And through his ascension back to the Father's right hand, his head reaches into the heavens. And between him are the angels of God, which ascend and descend and convey God's blessings to us, and perhaps our prayers to him, or whatever that exchange involves. There is a connection between you and heaven, and all of heaven's blessing, and all of heaven's provision, and all of heaven's protection is yours in Christ, who comes all the way down to meet you where you are. You know, the foot of that ladder that is Jesus doesn't just come down to the mountaintop. It comes all the way down to the lowest places. It comes all the way down to Nazareth. It comes all the way down to Hereford. It comes all the way down to where you are and to where I am, and it meets us there at our point of greatest need to show us that God hasn't forgotten us, that God can provide for us, that God can protect us, and God can bring us home to where we need to be if we will turn, believe, and trust. See the glory of God shining through the face of Jesus Christ. He's a ladder stretched out between heaven and earth and reaching from east to west and bringing all things together to find their connecting point in him. And so if you're here this morning friend invited you, or you're coming for the first time and you're trying to figure this out, I've just got one application for you to apply this week, and it's just super, super simple. Keep looking at Jesus and just come and see. Just keep coming and seeing. And I know the sermon doesn't always make sense. There's stuff, you know, this is a great church. It's not because of the preacher. It's because of, first of all, Jesus and all the people. There's so many good things to come and see here. But one thing that we strive to do, all of us strive to do, is we just try to set Jesus before you as the hope and your Savior. And especially between now and March, we're going to be doing that over and over and over again. We're going to just keep looking at these stories, these instances recorded by eyewitnesses or those who had thoroughly researched the account and discussed the matter with eyewitnesses and wrote down for us history of what happened when people met Jesus face to face, how it changed them. And so just come and see. Just keep coming and checking this out and see that maybe, just maybe, the thing that you've been looking for is found in a place that you least expected it. If this morning you've decided that that is the case, like Nathaniel, he is the Christ, he is the Son of God, he knows me, he loves me, and I'm ready to render my life completely to him. If you're ready to turn and trust and follow Jesus wherever he would lead you, then we're ready this morning to assist you in that. We'll be happy to baptize you into Christ where you're buried, die to your old life, and rise to that new life in Christ. If we can help you with that or in some other way, let us know right now.